Aaron, also, I told this to Polly, but I have somebody coming to answer a work order at some point today. They didn't give me a time. So if they show up in the middle of the podcast, Polly's going to take over as host for a second.
All good. Sounds good.
Welcome in, listeners, to another episode of the Busby Bay Podcast. I'm Colin Dams, joined by Polly Questel. Nathan Heinschel is out today, but we have Aaron Moniz back as a guest. How's it going, Aaron?
Pretty good. Don't like the international break, but love the Busby Babes, so happy to be here.
We were talking.
I've actually loved this international break because I've been able to get work done for my job because I don't have to be depressed all the time. well-timed international break.
It was pretty nice to not have Manchester United ruin my weekend, at 6 a.m. on a Saturday. So
they haven't ruined my weekend in a while, and that's what having expectations down in the dirt will do for you. Like when you just go in, like I had a family event during the derby, and I was like, for the first time, like not upset about it. I was like, oh, yeah, all right, I guess I'll watch the first half, and then I'll go on over to my family celebration and not have a care in the world. And like, we got back from it and my wife was like, you gonna watch the second half now? And I was like, nope. Like, sucked. Like,
yeah,
I'll watch it in a few days.
I saw your tweet at halftime and I kind of thought, yeah, I have a feeling City are gonna do rondos for the entire second half. So I'm kind of jealous that he got to leave. But, it is what it is, I guess.
Yeah, for those of us on match report duty, we have to stick out for the whole thing. I was on tweets for the Liverpool game, and that was definitely the worst experience because it just like kept going. Whereas the Manchester derby, it was kind of like boring, but with Liverpool, it was actually kind of exciting because they were playing really good football and destroying us, and it was like the game kept happening, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I had a great Liverpool experience also. I had a wedding that night, and I still went to the bar before the wedding, which, that's a dicey situation, but I literally just went and I was like, look, misery loves company. And if I had any hope that we would win this game or anything, I probably wouldn't be here because then I know I'd get carried away with the celebration. But knowing how this game is going to play out, I want to be around people. And then the bar lost their cable twice or three times or something right at the end of the first half and like right at the start of the second half. So we didn't even see the fourth or the fifth goal. So it was like, oh, this is better.
Yeah. Well, I guess going into topics for today, as you mentioned, it was the international break, and Manchester United fans are well aware that during a Manchester United or during an international break, it's time for transfer news and, random reports about how things are going. And this time we were subject to lots of new manager reports, reports about the squad being unhappy. And Donny van de Beek going to push a transfer away in January. Polly, did you want to say something about the specific report that you brought up before the pod?
Well, there was just that report yesterday that came from ESPN. It came from, who did it come from? Dawson, which is how you know it's just complete BS. Because if it has Dawson's name or Ogden's name, you know they're right up there with like Duncan Castles for just the least reliable people on the planet. And it was basically like listed a bunch of players who felt that they had been lied to or something, about their playing time because Ollie's not playing them now and that they're going to reassess their situation. And the list of players that it gave was like the most comical list you can imagine, which is like how you even knew it was complete BS because of the number one tell was what players are listed there and what players suspiciously are not.
Yeah. I mean, it looked like they went on, I don't actually know much about Rob Dawson's reliability, but it looked kind of like you went on Who Scored or like FPRF or something and sorted the squad by minutes played and then put the bottom five names in a report. Like it was what Martial, Lingard, Van de Beek,
Who haven't we seen?
Alex Telles and like, yeah. So I mean, what are you gonna say, right? I mean, I think there have been consistent.
It's funny though, because like Martial came on against Leeds. He started the match against Southampton when everybody was like, "What the hell is he starting for? He's been terrible recently." He came on against Wolves. He came on against Newcastle. He started the League Cup match. He started against Everton, and then he got hurt. So it's like, how can we play? Like, he was actually, for a player whom they signed, a player in his position, and if you want to move him to the left wing also, they signed another player in his position. He's actually playing quite a lot. And Lingard, they straight up told, like, "We don't really have a plan for you this summer. We want to sell you to West Ham." And he was like, "No." And those are the guys that are complaining. Those are the guys that feel lied to. Like, give me a break.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure about the Lingard thing, whether he insisted on staying or I don't know. It seems kind of like he was offered minutes if he stayed. And then the fee that United wanted was, I think they wanted something like £30 million, which that was never going to happen for a 29-year-old with a year left on his contract in a position where pretty much every team has a 24-year-old who's like as good at that Europa League level. So that was never going to happen with him leaving. I don't know what they were expecting. Optimists might have predicted more for Van de Beek because the first season was some kind of acclimatization thing, and now he's magically extremely fit, and that was the problem before, but he clearly wasn't. Martial, there seemed to be underlying fitness issues. Like, he just kind of, I think he got injured in like March and then was out for the season. And then against Everton, he kind of walked for the last 20 minutes of the half and walked when he scored his goal and then walked off when he got subbed. So, I mean, it doesn't seem like he was particularly fit to play. And like, United are so, so reliant on Sean Maguire. And I've seen a lot of people saying drop Sean Maguire, but it's like, that's how you lose more games because drop those guys. Wright. Suddenly the ball doesn't go from
Alex
one end of the pitch to the other.
Terrible. And yeah, Lingard, you're right. I think he was offered some minutes and he has gotten some minutes. You could argue he's gotten more than anybody even wants. You could argue he's gotten more than anybody even wants him to have, but hey, he's done well. He scored a goal. He's assisted he scored a winning goal. He's assisted on a winner. You know,
Young Boys is winner as well.
Yeah. I would actually argue that Lingard should have played more. He should have played either against Liverpool or City because that is the game that's the type of game that he's good at. And it's like, what's the point in keeping him if you're not going to play him in the games that suit him?
Yeah.
Alex Telles gets plenty of opportunities. He came last year. Shaw got hurt. He did have COVID when he first arrived, but then when he was back from getting COVID was right when Shaw got hurt. So he got an extended run of the team where he was okay. And then for the next like 2 months,
I think he got a start over Shaw against PSG in the Champions League.
Shaw was still hurt.
They both played. Yeah.
That was Leipzig. Was Shaw returned against Leipzig and Telles played as a wing back and got removed at halftime, and then Shaw got subbed off in the 60th minute, and like that's how bad Telles was that they knew Shaw could only play an hour and he still got subbed off at halftime. And for like December and January, Telles basically played once a week. Like, Solskjaer was not going to play Shaw twice a week. He was trying to manage his minutes, and it worked with, like, the League Cup and the FA Cup. And he started that Sheffield United match, and after that Sheffield United match, he was just, like, banned from the Premier League. And basically only came on to the point that it was, like, he only came on as a second-half sub when we had a lead in the Europa League, and he was still bad. But he got plenty of chances. He was just bad all the time. Man. And then this year he gets that start in the League Cup and it took him, 3 minutes to just get done in, to put us down 1-0. Who else is missing this?
Yeah.
I mean,
that half against Roma was terrible. The one with Telles and Williams. Yeah. That was so bad.
Yeah. I mean, Telles just literally went, back post. Nah, I'm not going to mark it.
Yeah, well,
what harm can come from me not marking the back post? Nothing will happen.
Yeah, I mean, well, the thing is, they took United had one of the most well-rounded fullbacks in the world in Luke Shaw and what he does. He's like extremely important from in build-up, extremely important with his passing and carrying, gets into dangerous areas, can underlap, can overlap, can cross, make runs into the box, can also defend. I mean, recently he's been like double and triple teamed by the opposition winger fullback and our own system against himself, but like he's also, I would say, a well above average defender in his role, and they went and needed a backup for him, and they got Telles, who is kind of this, like, he's, if you coach him, he could probably do the positional game in a back four, and then his attacking game is the fact that he strikes the ball well from where he happens to receive it. And like, that's useful, right? Like James Ward-Prowse is a perfectly average Premier League midfielder who offers a lot in a dead ball and in long range situations. And like, fair enough, that works, but you need to then have something that...
Telles is like so far down the pecking order of dead ball takers.
He takes the corners, and that's about it. So Ronaldo's taking free kicks, which is just terrible. And then when he doesn't, Bruno takes them, which is fair enough. But then so you're not really doing anything with Telles' strengths, and then you're also not doing anything to cover for the fact that you remove Shaw. It's another Bruno and Van de Beek situation where you've taken someone who does everything and replace him with someone who does a couple things really well, and you've made no other changes to the rest of the team to accommodate for that. And then Telles is awful, and you're like, oh no, we need to play Shaw 50 times a season now because we can't make changes to cover for this. So then he's not playing. So he's played, I think he played like marginally more than Van de Beek last season. And
Telles?
Yeah, it was like the minutes breakdown was, sorry? It
had to be more than marginal.
It was like, it
might not show up on like StatsBomb or FBref or whatever, but I think Donny van de Beek had close to 40 appearances last season. It's just that.
Yeah, he had a lot of like 2 minute cameos. Like,
yeah.
84.
Yeah.
I'm still confused what they saw in Alex Telles. Like, I'm pretty sure that it was like the Reguilon deal fell apart. We had another left back that we were looking at, and that didn't work. And then they were like, oh, look at this Telles guy. He had 20 goals last year, and look at his YouTube videos. And that was all we saw. Like, that deal almost fell apart because we wanted to pay 12 or 13 million for him, and Porto at the last minute wanted 18, and we held firm over that 5 million. And like, that was the best piece of business we did because he is not worth that extra 5 million. Like, yeah. Kudos.
I mean,
and at one point he even came out and said, he was like, I feel like Porto are holding me ransom here. Like, just sell me for the 13 million. But I think the indictment is like, you could say, okay, he's an attacking left back and he strikes the ball really well and all that's true. And he is more of an attacking left back. But the indictment is that in games where we needed a goal, the League Cup match against Everton, the match against Sheffield United, like, Alex Telles is getting pulled off the pitch against Villarreal a couple weeks ago. Alex Telles is the one getting pulled off the pitch. Against Villarreal, it was funny because it was for Fred, who ended up setting up the winning goal. But it's like, okay, you said, as Aaron said, we have this well-rounded fullback in Luke Shaw, and you could be a well-rounded fullback who happens to be worse in a particular, you know, in a particular area than somebody else. Somebody else could be like an elite attacking fullback, but has deficiencies elsewhere. And it's like, even where Telles is really good, it's like Shaw was still better and like offered us more going forward that it just made it so hard to play Telles all the time. But he still got his opportunities. And this tweet also mentioned Juan Mata, which was also hilarious because Juan Mata signed a new deal
to get his coaching badges. Like, that's what his new contract is.
He signed a new deal before the 2019-20 season where Ollie straight up said to him, like, I cannot offer you the playing time that you used to get. You are going to play less. And they paid him less, and he accepted that. He accepted a pay cut and a reduced role, and then that contract expired this season, and he signed a new deal, knowing that Ahmad was now here and Ilanga was coming through. Like, he couldn't have been expecting a lot of playing time in any way, shape, or form. And the only time that he would have gotten more last year, because when they needed him, He was away on personal leave, and that's fine, but don't complain like that you didn't, you know, there were minutes for him. It just happened to be that it didn't work out. So I can't see him complaining. Eric Bailly, we know that Eric Bailly is the leak in the locker room who's questioning Solskjaer's tactics and his team selection, and he's mad that he's not playing Eric Bailly, but Eric Bailly has been bad when he's been picked. When I saw his name on the team sheet 2 weeks ago, I said, oh, he's going to get yanked at halftime. I was one game off. He made it through the Atalanta match. He got yanked at halftime against City. He was bad in both of those. But also, you just signed a contract this summer knowing all these rumors about how we were going to be signing a center back. You might, I think he signed it before Varane signed, but there were so many rumors that a center back was coming in. Like, what did you expect, Eric Bailly?
You got to admit, though, when he does start, it's great for content. I mean,
for sure. He's fun to watch. He's not good, but he's fun to watch.
Yeah. And kind of going back a little bit to Telles and Van de Beek, those kind of transfers that we've, I guess for last season in particular, the justification that we saw for them was in the long run, they offer Solskjaer tactical flexibility. And there's been a lot of reports about Solskjaer wanting to be more flexible and try different formations and be able to, you know, adjust mid game and things like that. But for all of last season, we really didn't get to see much of that. And obviously one of the problems is, you know, midfield flexibility and what our midfield is able to support. But do we think that at this point we can just view those as kind of excuses for not getting the players that generally we try and get? Or is that actually something that we think Solskjaer has tried to do and just hasn't?
Yeah, I don't know. I think the approach that they kind of took was we need backups for these key players. Let's sign what we perceive to be the best player available for the price that we want to pay. So in Van de Beek's position, they wanted Jack Grealish. They couldn't afford Jack Grealish. They got Van de Beek. In Telles' case, it was the price point, right? They wanted someone who was cheap and left-footed because the problem was that Brandon Williams was right-footed. And that was the biggest overarching issue, like, besides his defensive frailties and inexperience and probably lack of impact going forward as well. The real issue was that the fact that he was using his right foot was just constantly a problem. So they went and signed the most affordable left-footed left back with a reputation, right? And in the meanwhile, Liverpool went and signed Tsimikas. And what the approach they took was, you know, we have Robertson, who is absolutely crucial to our system. If Robertson gets injured, we're going to have issues. How can we can't get someone who's as good as Robertson to play our backup role, but how can we get someone who's as similar to Robertson as possible and can do the things that we have Robertson do, even if at not as high a level, and get him to perform that way? And then at the same time, Wolves went and got Ranieri Nuri, who is a 20-year-old left back who is now in his second season at Wolves and starting to break into the first team. And he's much more technically adept on the ball than Telles, much more dynamic, a better carrier, the type of player who he isn't as good as Shaw yet, but he can really impact games with the ball at his feet and not just by kicking it well. So it's all about approaches and what you aim for and what you get, right? And then I think it's also got a knock-on effect on the squad rotation, because I think the system has kind of been built around what these key individuals can do. Shaw, Maguire, Bruno, Pogba when he was playing on the left, Cavani, and then to a lesser extent Fred were the ones that were kind of like, these guys define how United play pretty much every week. And you went and signed players who were completely different and then didn't put the changes in place to get them in the team. So then what happens is you can't just go, you know what, we're going to go with 10 of our 11 and then sub out Bruno for Van de Beek so Bruno can get some rest. And we have the confidence that Van de Beek will still be able to win this game with Van de Beek in the side. You can't do that. So then what ends up happening is you have these games where you just switch the entire first team for the entire second team and go, hope they get a 0-0 and we can nick this game 1-0, even if it's against like a team from two leagues down, because this team has never played together and they have no idea how they're supposed to be playing in the roles of the first team players. So then you just end up having no squad rotation once you get to a point in the season where the opposition is difficult enough that you can't do that. And then the same players play through injury and, like, build up of fitness issues, and half the team is unfit because they don't play and they're unhappy, and the other half of the team is unhappy because and unfit because they're playing too much. And then by the end of the season, it all crumbles, and you get those, like, extremely tired, broken performances like the one in the Europa League final. And Solskjaer still refuses to make subs even in that game, right? So it's a mix. There's a lot of blame to go around for this, like, squad players not playing minutes situation. Mm-hmm. If I were Van de Beek, I would be seeking a move away in January. He's at that stage in his career where he kind of has to intervene to make sure that it doesn't go away, right? And I know we have the saying, like, no player is bigger than the club, and it's true, but also these players have short careers, and they have to make the best of those careers, and United as an employer, it's their job to make sure that they have the player's best interest in mind when they make decisions, and I don't feel that they do that enough or at the level that they should be.
It's also pretty interesting that no player is bigger than the club, or it's pretty rich that it comes from Manchester United so much when, one, we're a club that constantly idolizes players of the past, and two, our owner's most direct intervention probably in their entire tenure was to sign Cristiano Ronaldo.
And at whom they are making the club. Like, the social media is just the Ronaldo show now. But, like, to expand on Aaron's point, I think ultimately it's two sides of the same coin. But this is what drives me nuts about United. And he talked about the recruitment. And I don't think was signed for tactical flexibility. It was, we saw what happened in Project Restart when Luke Shaw got hurt and Brandon Williams came in and everything fell apart. We needed a left-footed left back. And that was our, as Aaron said, that was what we were doing. And we found Tellez because he was third on the list. Like, we actually had a list, and, like, we wanted Sergio Reguilon. Real Madrid had the buyback clause, and we were like, yeah, that's going to be a no. And we just made our way down the list, whereas other teams just sign these unheard of players, but they fit the mold. And the question is do United have a mold? Like, they spent, like, we've just heard, we spent 3 years now hearing about how Solskjaer has increased the scouting and increased the analytics department and how much money United are spending in these areas. And it still just seems that when they come up with their names, the number one thing, like, when it gets kicked up to, at some point in the chain of command, it gets kicked up to, well, do people know who this is? How will our fans react? You will never sign, like, United will never sign another Patrice Evra. They're never going to sign another Nemanja Vidic. Fans won't have it. They're going to be like, who the heck is this guy? And they're not going to allow him to step into the team and be like, oh, actually, like, I'm a like-for-like replacement for Bruno Fernandes so he can get rest, and I'm just going to score at a third of the production of him, but I'm going to play a third of the time or whatever. That's where you have a lot of problems. There's also the other problems of and I've said this before, we didn't really need a center back. No center backs left. We signed a center back. We didn't need a striker. No attacking players left. We signed an attacking player and a striker. We very much needed a midfielder, and it was, oh, we can only sign a midfielder if Paul Pogba leaves. And it's like, we are overstaffed in those two areas of the pitch. We are understaffed in that one, and it's, you can only sign one if the best one leaves. How does that make it, like, which means, okay, so Pogba leaves, we sign, the next Zidane or the next insert greatest player ever. We sign that guy. What happens when he gets hurt? Because it's inevitable that he will. And now you're back to square one of McTominay, Fred, Matic. Now, when it comes to Van de Beek, we have completely lost sight of what happened around the Van de Beek signing. Is just like with Tellez, we came out of Project Restart, and Project Restart showed us, hey, Bruno Fernandes, very, very good. Take Bruno Fernandes out of the team, problem. We got nobody.
Pereira, very, very bad.
Right. It's Pereira, it's Lingard. Like, remember, we rotated the team, especially in that FA Cup game against Norwich, but we still had to start Bruno. And we didn't have anybody to really rotate for Rashford or anybody. We needed depth. at the top, yeah, because Lingard and Pereira weren't cutting it. So, yes, Jack Grealish was our top choice. And remember everybody complaining, like, why do we want Grealish? Where's he going to play? And it was like, we have Bruno, we have Rashford. And it's like, he'll play, you'll figure it out. And also now you can rest these guys. So Grealish turns out to be too expensive. So you go for Van de Beek, who the fan base was calling for. They were like, this guy is sitting there cheap. Go out there and sign him. And it made sense when you think, well, we've got Jadon Sancho following him through the door. And these two guys, their playing styles are going to get along really well, and you could play them with a Bruno or a Pogba. And then Sancho didn't follow him through the door. And you remember everything kind of clicked in that, I mean, it was a cameo and it was Newcastle. It was like 10 minutes, but the three of them at one point were playing together in the front three behind Rashford for a bit. And they were really good. And
was this Pogba, Bruno, and Van de Beek?
Yeah.
Okay, I think Mata was on the pitch as well, so I think Pogba might have been in the pivot.
No, Mata had come off. Yeah. Mata had come off.
Oh, okay, okay.
Are you talking about, like, Newcastle and Leipzig, like, that kind of...
Yeah, Leipzig, he wasn't actually that good. But Southampton, he was.
He did
his job on the left wing. And then the next week, Solskjaer started them against West Ham, and it was a disaster because he started them in place of Bruno, and he started them with Cavani, Martial, and Greenwood, which are Martial and Greenwood are guys that need the ball like at their feet and to play through, and they're not going to pass to you when you go and find good spots. Like that's a thing that was never going to work. But Jadon Sancho would be able to pick out those passes, and after that, he just got relegated to the bench after that game, like, which admittedly was a disaster. He also came back against Everton in the League Cup. He played with Bruno and Greenwood and Cavani up top, and he played him on the left wing, which should have been a pretty, and Pogba was in midfield. It should have been a pretty good combination, but that's the game where we literally heard Solskjaer on the sidelines telling him, keep making those runs in behind Donny. Like, he literally played Donny van de Beek and said, play like Marcus Rashford, which makes no sense, which is when you start to question, like, well, does Ole Gunnar Solskjaer know how to use him? So this season, you bring in Sancho, and you're like, okay, now you do get that tactical flexibility, and this was, like, the end of Colin's question was, is Solskjaer doing it? No, he's not. That's the weird thing is now – I understand not doing it last year because you didn't really have the players to make it work. And, like, I know.
And also, like, the damage control he had to do last year ended up just being, like, something that worked probably better than most people realized over the, like, December, January part of the schedule. And that's just kind of what we rode the rest of the season. Whereas now, he doesn't have any more answers for damage
control. Yeah, right. I mean, and it's just like you're not playing these guys together. Yes, again, 5-minute cameo, but the best we looked against Atalanta was when these two guys were on the pitch and linking up with each other. And it boggles my mind because it just doesn't seem like there doesn't seem to be any flexibility with Solskjaer now. He keeps throwing Mason Greenwood out there next to Ronaldo, and like his first choice front three is probably Ronaldo flanked by Rashford and Greenwood. Like, you've got Cristiano Ronaldo, who is probably the best player in the world at putting the ball in the net and could be lethal if you just got him the ball in the box, and you're flanking him with two guys whose instinct is to cut inside and shoot and not really create. And all the while, you've got Jadon Sancho, who leads the team in getting the ball into the box and is second in the team in creating shots, just sitting on the bench being like, what's going on? That's to take this full circle back to the tweet, like of all the players mentioned, like I said, it's interesting to see the ones mentioned and the seams and the ones that weren't. Cavani and Sancho are not mentioned in that tweet. And they are the ones with the two biggest gripes because Sancho has been playing well and he's been doing the things that you need to be done that aren't being done right now. Whereas Cavani, you basically got down on hands and knees and begged him to stay for another year. And now you've basically been like, oh yeah, well,
yeah,
at least you're a nice guy. So you'll take it well that you're sitting on the bench again.
Oh, Yeah, I mean, and there were elements of this last season, but this front three of, like, Ronaldo, Rashford, and Greenwood, it has this kind of pre-offside rule vibes where you just think, like, oh, you can just fit three strikers on a pitch and then the ball doesn't actually go, like, in the midfield. It just goes from one side to the other, and then hopefully they can score goals, right? But United just don't create any form of, like, attacking patterns anymore. Even, and they already weren't creating enough, but, like, now it's completely regressed to, like, there are games when it's actually players camping around the, like, circle around the edge of the 18-yard box and taking shots. And Solskjaer is going, you know, if this is what it is, it's like he's going, how do I save my job? Who can win me this game? And it's like Rashford, yeah. Greenwood, and Ronaldo are the three who are the most likely to pick up the ball from range and shoot. And it's looking at all the other players and going, like, Sancho and Van de Beek were signed by Solskjaer for over 100 million. What are they doing? Pogba, you have to sell a midfielder to get Pogba, but Pogba wasn't playing in midfield last season at the end. The whole reason why United were winning games was because Pogba and Fernandes were driving the creativity of the team, and they were the ones who were leading that those creations of patterns. You had two guys who were, one, helping out the weakness in midfield in possession by being able to progress the ball incredibly well and then also create. And then, two, you had Cavani, who was going to go, okay, so you don't have, if you have Pogba and Fernandes in your front four, they're not going to be stretching lines. So we're going to play a guy who's just going to stand in the last line and move along and behind the last line to help us balance that out. So you had this balancing act that you'd created, whether by accident or on purpose, that was leading to these patterns. And then you've gone, okay, we need to remove one piece. So now none of it works out, and now we're going to remove everything. And then you're also misdiagnosing your players. So, like, how you can watch Pogba for 5 years here and go, he's the guy we need to get rid of to sign a midfielder. Like, it just makes no sense at all. It's like, it's almost as if you haven't watched him for 5 years and gone, this guy isn't a pivot midfielder. And it's like, it's the same thing again. Like, this season he's playing in defensive midfield, and, you know, Twitter and everyone are crying about how awful he's playing, but it's like, this is not the player he is. I could have told you this from his third appearance against Hull City in his first season under Mourinho, but 5 years later, we're still here.
Well, where does he play for France, Aaron?
it's ridiculous. And even in, like, even for France, he doesn't play the game that he plays for United. It's just,
also, like, France don't really play. France don't really play with a pivot. Like, they've, in fact, this year they've often been playing with a diamond, which is a three-man midfield to begin with. But yeah, in the World Cup, like, Blaise Matuidi was the left wing. Like, okay. Yeah, Blaise Matuidi is not a left winger. He's a pivot player. There was a lot of support for Pogba, and it's just a different setup to begin with. But to go back to what Aaron said, it's almost like United are managing, or Solskjaer's managing this like he's playing FIFA and being like, well, Rashford could shoot well, Greenwood could shoot well, Ronaldo could shoot well, and so I could always post up from just outside the box and let it rip, but also when I'm holding the controller, I can make them be creative players, and I can make them look for Ronaldo and have these interchanges. But also, on FIFA, when I put Ronaldo in at center forward, he's going to stay at center forward. He's not going to wander around the pitch. I think you could change the settings to let him do that, or you could change the settings to not let him do that.
But he's also not going to just, like, stand around and complain for the last 20 minutes when things aren't happening.
It's so absurd.
That was, like, I can make Mason Greenwood this creative. I could say, hey, I got the ball on the right side of the pitch. I'm going to try to beat the man here and whip in across. But, like, Mason Greenwood, the human, isn't going to do that. He's going to put the ball on his left foot, and he's probably going to drive forward and shoot, or he's going to check back to either Wan-Bissaka or McTominay. And there's this, I finally got around to rewatching the Atalanta game yesterday, and there is this hilarious segment about 13 minutes in where United get the ball and they start moving it forward, and Ronaldo does a really good job of dropping into space to provide a hold-up option, and they give him the ball, and he gets it, and he turns, and he plays it across to Shaw, who is now in space, to carry it forward. And what does Ronaldo do? He kind of just, like, jogs over and a little bit behind Shaw. And it's like, and so Shaw then carries it a few yards, stops, looks up, and he's got, I got Rashford standing here a bit to my left with a man right on top of him. Ronaldo is 5 yards behind me to my right, like kind of overlapping, and there is no one in the middle. And it's like,
I mean,
Ronaldo's playing center forward, like, doing that job, and it's like he is not. Like, if he were a, like, you get that ball, you turn, you play it to Shaw, and then you just, there weren't even Atalanta defenders in the middle. You just run forward and Shaw plays a ball right over the top to the top of the box, and you are golden, and he's just not doing that.
Yeah, it's, but,
I mean, isn't this something we're used to seeing though with Martial as well? I mean, forwards who don't stay in the middle and create space. I mean, it's like, even after signing Ronaldo, who a lot of his goals are kind of, you know, being a poacher, I feel like Edinson Cavani is still our best, you know, brute in the box option in terms of just having a center forward who is going to create options for us.
Yeah, it's a different profile. Like, that front three drives me mad. Like, it, the Ronaldo, Rashford, Greenwood, because it's the perfect front three of, like, no striker hold up, no running, like, no last line presence, except for when Rashford's running in behind in transitions, no work before the half line, like, out off the ball, like, just, they literally just shoot, and Rashford gets in behind sometimes, and Ronaldo gets in behind sometimes, and that's it. Like, that's, if you have three of your 10 players, like, that's, it's almost, it's like 10 times worse than what PSG are trying to do with Messi, Neymar, and Mbappe as the front three of a pressing system. Like, it's actually worse than that, because at least Messi, Neymar, and Mbappe are all elite creators on the ball. So you might argue, like, you can argue that if you figure out how to accommodate having them in that team, it actually makes sense and they'll generate enough going forward. But Ronaldo, Rashford, and Greenwood never will.
I think part of this is just me wanting this to have been the case, but I really think that PSG and United signed the wrong players. I think PSG should have signed Ronaldo and Manchester United should have signed Messi.
That would be great, yeah.
If those were going to be the options, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you're playing hero ball with the system of, like, freeing up individuals in the final third, I would have liked to watch some combination of Messi with United's current players. Yeah, that would have been good, but...
But unfortunately, here we are. Yeah. And also, I don't know what you do with Jadon Sancho at that point. I guess you play him on the left with Messi on the right and then Cavani in the middle.
He's on the bench now, so.
I mean, but yeah, but that would work. That would work more. Like, because one of the reasons that Pogba isn't playing on the left anymore is because Ronaldo just drops into that space and stands on top of him. Exactly. And that's kind of becoming a problem. And that's why Pogba started playing poorly and he was dropped. And then he comes back in the pivot and you're asking your pivot defenders, midfielders to defend just loads and loads of space, and then he looks poor also. But it's like, you can't go a game without being like, oh, we need Paul Pogba. Like, he doesn't play against Everton, and all of a sudden it's like, we got to bring on Pogba, like, to try to rescue this game. He doesn't play against Atalanta, and it's like, oh, we got to bring on Pogba to try to rescue this game. And to go back to what Aaron was saying about him being a pivot player, people get so offended when they're like, oh, he's a midfielder. How could you say he can't play in midfield? Which is, you know, again, goes back to how FIFA is kind of like, FIFA has been great for the sport and is also like the video game. And it's also terrible for the sport because
not FIFA,
everybody just gets classified.
FIFA, the organization, has not been great for the sport.
Right. Yeah. Well, it just gets classified for, as a midfielder, and like Aaron has said, Pogba is in the pivot. Not that it doesn't work with next to certain players. He came here, and as Aaron said, three games in against Hull City, you could see he wasn't doing well there. And that's because he was playing next to Fellaini, who could offer him no protection and no help.
He then
turned things around and played really well there for the rest of the season when he started playing next to Michael Carrick. And the reason being is that Carrick could pass the ball.
Well, they played 4-3-3 as well with Carrick and Herrera, which was the key, right? Someone to cover, someone to run, and Pogba. That's always been the formula. You had Pirlo as someone to cover, Vidal as someone to run, and Pogba. And then you, like, even in France, I know we played in the pivot, and I don't like using France as an example because I think the game he plays for France is a very limited subset of what his actual skill is.
He's literally playing long balls for Mbappe to counterattack.
Exactly. But
it's exactly what he did in that 4-0 win against Chelsea. But every single game.
Yeah, exactly. Because teams don't press properly at international level. So,
but also, but France themselves play more defensively, and they like sit, they get stuck in, and they sit, they don't dominate the ball. They sit there and then guess what happened when they were like, he suffered the same vulnerabilities because they went out of the Euros because he got caught on the ball in midfield, and Switzerland went down and scored.
Yeah, I mean, it's just infuriating. Like, you have this extremely versatile combination of, like, creative, playmaking, moving players sitting on the bench who can, I mean, no disrespect to Rashford, Greenwood, and Ronaldo, right? Like, Greenwood's gonna be a great player one day. Rashford's already super useful in certain ways. And Ronaldo is, as Paulie said, the best goal scorer in the world. Like, he is the best player in the world at putting the ball in the back of the net. But you're playing all three of them when you have this mix of players who can basically carry out any attacking setup that you feasibly want. Sitting on your bench, you've got between off-ball movers and Cavani, Van de Beek, Lingard. You've got playmakers like Sancho, Pogba. You've got youngsters like Alanga and Ahmad waiting. Sold Dan James, who was another balancing player, and it's like, and then on top of that, you've taken Cavani out of the team, who was the balancing act, where you go, we have too many players who want the ball at once. Let's stick this guy up front, and he's gonna give them the option to play the ball out to, and allow them to combine in the middle third and the final third and be positionally free, essentially, without completely sacrificing the attacking.
And now you have, like,
and now Cavani, you just dropped him to the curb. It's just gone.
To be fair, Cavani actually does have a tendon injury, which I think they revealed last week. So that's why
he got hurt for the derby. And he would have started alongside Ronaldo.
The other problem with Cavani is that happens every time he plays more than 90 minutes and one half of football in a week. He somehow always ends up on the trainer's table. And that's why it was like, that's why going into the season was going to look promising, because when people were like, well, where's Greenwood going to play? And all this, it's like, you have Cavani can't play more than once a week and he's going to be injured. Martial is going to need some playing time and he's going to get injured. And then you have Greenwood, who's going to carry the bulk of the other time and give them rest to try to prevent them from getting injuries. And this way you'll also be able to rotate Sancho in, and that opens up a spot for Van de Beek and Ilanga and Ahmad. And then you plopped Ronaldo there and basically been like, well, he's going to be there every single game now. So we still have to play Rashford, and Ollie still really wants to play Greenwood. So suddenly there's just no time to give out to these other players. But last season, Cavani didn't click until the very end of the season. And I think part of that is COVID, and that's part of why Van de Beek didn't get going. Not easy to move to another country with no family and not be allowed out of your house for 8 months. And I think that was part of the reason that Kai Havertz and Timo Werner struggled also. It clicked at the end when they added Pogba on that left wing. In the middle of the season, when they were flanking him with Rashford and Martial and Greenwood, it wasn't clicking because, again, you're playing a guy who wants service in the box, flanked by two guys who want to shoot and run in behind, who need a guy who's going to link play and open up and drop deep and open up space to run in behind. Now, once you added Pogba there, that changed some elements. Now, to go back to Pogba in the pivot, and as I said, people get like insulted when you say a player can't play in the pivot. Like, as Aaron mentioned, because he mentioned him, Ander Herrera is like one of the most beloved United midfielders in the fan base. He couldn't play in a pivot. Like, Van Gaal wouldn't use him in a pivot. Mourinho wouldn't use him in a pivot. It was like, oh, he's got too much. He's like, Fred, he's got too much energy, and he's always trying to engage and pressure the ball, and he gets sucked out of position. He was always at his best in a three, whether it was with Carrick or Matic, or, you know, prior to that. Well, no, under Van Gaal, it was also with Carrick. That's fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with certain midfielders not being able to play in a pivot. It's just that if you want to play a 4-2-3-1 and allow that, like, you have to accommodate for that in your team building, and somehow United just haven't. There's just so much disconnect in this United everything.
How do we put your meme on a podcast?
The problem in midfield.
Yeah, all the players that have been signed for Solskjaer.
That's great.
The problem goes beyond the midfield now because they switched the back three against Spurs and it worked and it looked good and everybody knew where to be. It really helped that Cavani was dropping into midfield to create basically a 5-4-1. But also Spurs were really bad. And then they basically went with the same thing against Atalanta, except it wasn't the same thing. The first 25 minutes of that match, I kept asking, like, what formation are we playing? Is this the 5-3-2 or the 3-5-2 that we were playing against Spurs? Or is this more of a 3-4-3? Because Bruno was basically acting like a right midfielder and a right winger. Rashford was kind of tucked inside to be like a left midfielder. All of a sudden it was lost again. And that's been another problem. Like somehow a team that used to be very well organized over the last 2 years, when they put a strategy in, whether it was different, whether it was a back three against PSG or going to Anfield and playing a 4-4-2 or at the Etihad when they basically had Rashford, Martial, Lingard, and James playing a 4-2-4 on the ball, but off the ball, James was tucking in to make a 4-3-3. Like, this was a team that was organized and knew what they were doing, and somehow that's never the case anymore.
And it all
keeps adding up as to, like, what is going on at this club? Like, the scouting's off. The scouting, the data, they've added these things, and yet they can't identify proper players.
They don't know Pogba's position after 200 appearances for the club.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous.
Like what I was going to say, like, Pogba can play in a pivot if you play him next to a passer. They keep playing him next. Last season, he started next to McTominay against West Ham and Everton in the league. And that was it. In the Everton match, he lasted 38 minutes before he left injured. That was it. There is a reason Solskjaer doesn't play him next to McTominay. The only other times they started together, I believe, were like against Granada in the Europa League and in the Europa League final when Fred was hurt. The reason is because teams just leave McTominay wide open and then they pressure Pogba. They go, oh, Pogba's got the ball. Let's swarm him. And we can do that because we don't have to worry about McTominay. And when McTominay gets the ball, that gives them so much time to like reset and be like, well, he's going to take the safe option. He's either going to go back to Lindelof or he's going to go out wide to Juan Bissaka, and that's fine. We don't care if Juan Bissaka has the ball. He's not going to hurt us either. There were situations against City where like McTominay was in acres of space and it was like, just take the game to them. And he just looked flustered and was like, let me pass it wide to the fullback. And that's why Pogba struggles. Like, as Carl said to us over the summer, the Pogba-Fred pivot should work better than it does. Because he said there's just so many times where Fred gets the ball and he's just looking to give it to Pogba, which Matic does the same thing, and a lot of people do that. It's a smart play. But there's times where he gives it to Pogba, who's, like, under pressure, and Pogba, like, just one touch passes it back to Fred and shoots him that look of being like, go bring it up the field yourself. Because you're open. And Fred just like cowers to Pogba being like, oh no, you're on the pitch. So I'm going to leave this job to you. And it's like, they're leaving you open. So if you keep playing him next to these guys that can't pass, teams are going to continue to just double and triple team him and he's going to be a liability. And United just aren't doing anything to accommodate that.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've got to go soon, but I did want to get this last topic off before Aaron, you have to go. So this kind of brings it back a little bit to that first tweet that started the conversation of players maybe, you know, being a source for reporters and, you know, communicating their distress. One player that has been suspected of that has been Dean Henderson, because last year especially, he had the difficult situation of kind of being brought back in and given, supposedly going to be given the opportunity to, you know, maybe take over this number one spot. And it looked like Solskjaer was going to kind of usher in that era at some point. He started basically every Premier League game for the last stretch of the season while De Gea was given Europa League duty. He gets COVID right before this season starts, and doesn't start the first few games in the Premier League. And De Gea has just kind of been keeping the job in Champions League and Premier League since then. Do we think that this is a situation where Man United maybe can't be patient anymore, or is this something that, you know, maybe they're just committed to that contract that they gave De Gea 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah, I think it's wage politics ultimately. I think you can't pay De Gea as much as you do and give him the level of importance in the squad that you give him and then not play him, because at this point, there aren't really that many reasons not to play Dean Henderson, in my opinion. Like, I think De Gea is still a good shot stopper, but he's been making a few mistakes in his game. And there was a reason why Henderson continued to play in goal when De Gea came back. And that was because I wouldn't say he's the perfect modern goalkeeper, because there's holes in his game in possession, which is now something people demand of goalkeepers at the top level. But his game is much more complete than De Gea's in that he's much better at sweeping. He's better in 1v1 situations, proactive claiming crosses, proactive for 1v1s. And those types of skills are really important at a club like United, because it allows them to play a high line in possession and have more defensive stability through that. So it really makes a lot of sense for Henderson to be playing, even if he isn't good enough to be the long-term option. And ultimately, right, even if you think De Gea and Henderson are equal, or Henderson is even slightly worse, Henderson's 23, 24, De Gea is 31 and past his best, which I think we can all agree he's past his best, even if you still think he's really good. Playing Henderson is planning for the future, whereas playing De Gea is trying to prolong the past. And I think at some point you just have to cut that cord and move on, but...
Yeah, real quick, because I don't want to keep him. I think there is some wage politics involved, although it's funny how, like, wage politics will present itself at goalkeeper, but he'll freely drop Paul Pogba, and somehow Jadon Sancho is sitting on the bench while lesser earners, but typically academy players, are getting more minutes. I think it's a culmination of a lot of different days of, like, bad luck for Dean Henderson. I think he would have been the number one if he didn't get COVID. And De Gea started the season well enough to keep his place. And by well enough to, and the key for De Gea is, as Aaron's saying, he doesn't do a lot of things. But he doesn't do a lot of things that don't really show up to your eyes. There's so many things where, like, if Dean Henderson is up off his line and encouraging the defense and organizing the defense to stay organized and to play at a certain place, you know, all Dean Henderson gets is, oh, that they tried to chip a ball over the top and it comes to his feet. Oh, okay. That's just bad playing by the opposition or a bad pass. Whereas opposed to if you don't do that and the opposition brings it and gets a shot from the top of the box and you make a spectacular save, that makes you look really good. So De Gea is excelling in the areas that look really good. Whereas United fans love to focus on the firefighters rather than the people that start the fire. And it's, if you just don't start fires, you don't need the all-time best firefighters. And De Gea this season has been a very good firefighter, so they're hesitant to drop him. But at this point now, he's made some errors. The Atalanta game was bad. The second goal from the Bernardo goal against City was atrocious. It's time to, you can now move on to Dean Henderson.
Yeah, once you stop kind of having your eye on the future, I don't think it comes back. I think that's it. Like, once you go, we need to win now, don't worry about the future, that's the beginning of the end. That's the end of looking at the long-term vision. And yeah, unfortunately, it's sad to see with Solskjaer, because I think there was a really good long-term focus when he first joined on getting younger players into the side, getting fresher players into the side, and developing these players with actual minutes. But now it seems to have gone away.
Yeah. We talked about this in the Slack for the Busby Babe, that when Polly made that meme, is like his first season, full season as manager, he brings in Harry Maguire, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, and Bruno Fernandes, who are players that fill direct squad holes at that time. And it gave the impression, you know, like our recruitment finally seems like it has more of a long-term plan. You know, we're buying players that can both play right now and look like they'll turn into something really good later. And it, kind of bringing it back to, you know, United just having this history of not knowing what to do with players that they sign. We're in this situation once again where we have a squad that's really full in certain areas and not in others.
Right. And like Aaron said, once you take your eye off the future, that's a problem. Like, that's something that Ferguson never did. When you look at the last great team that he built, all right, so he brought in Rooney and Ronaldo and then supplemented them, added Michael. 2006 was like that last piece. Here's Michael Carrick. And then what did he do the following year, which is when he really took off and the team really took off. But all right, so he added a little bit more depth there with Owen Hargreaves and then Nani, Anderson, the year later, Rafael. It was like, all these are future moves. It was, my team is just hitting. It's like we haven't peaked yet. We're still getting there. And I'm already thinking about what comes next.
And then when the team declined, and they still won the Premier League in 2013. Who was playing minutes, right? Rafael, Carrick. I'm not sure if Nani played many minutes that season. I know he
was hurt.
A really good record in 11-12.
Yeah, he was. He got hurt that year.
You get, like, Tom Cleverley as well, though. Like, other youth.
Yeah.
Johnny Evans, Phil Jones, Chris Smalling, you know. All right. Sorry if we kept you too long, Aaron.
No, that's fine. Don't worry. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us. Hopefully next time we get you on, Nathan will be here since he was the one who brought you to us in the first place.
Yes, yeah. I haven't gotten to speak with Nathan yet. I'd love that.
No, he's our vibes manager, so he'll bring all the vibes analysis the next time we need it. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.